Roxo Media House.
You know, smash Amber, but you might end up with a turd in your bed.
Frog fans, welcome to Post Game Beers. We are the Lupton Drinking Club, and we are here celebrating your Big 12 regular season champions, Frog Ball USA. But first, we're going to talk a lot about the feud between Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher. Guys, where do y'all come out on this one?
Oh, man, dude. I thought it was hilarious. So Big Game Boomer put out a best accounts to follow for the summer. And for Texas A&M, he put Cash App was the app to follow for your Aggies.
Pretty good.
Yeah, when I see it like on my Twitter feed or whatever, and they're like, "Oh man, Texas A&M and Alabama are fighting or whatever," and it's like, why? Like, yeah, the number one and the number two recruiting class in the country. Like, you weren't paying them before?
Right.
Well, it's funny, the first time that Jimbo actually comes out and says anything is after they beat him, right? So it's like, before that, nothing, you know?
Yeah, Jimbo would just tucked his tail and gone back to his office or whatever.
What I thought was real interesting was when, so apparently Jimbo Fisher was an assistant for Nick Saban in the past. And so after this thing had been going on for a few days, you know, he comes out and says something like, that we treat Nick Saban like he's a god. He's like, well, you should go look into God's past and, you know, see how he got there.
His name's going to pop right up.
you're saying one of his disciples is calling his god out.
That's why Nick Saban should not be going after his former assistants, because who knows more about Nick Saban's program than his former assistants?
I mean, have you seen Nick Saban's record against his former assistants? I think Kirby Smart
was the first one.
Was the first one to beat him.
Yeah. In the national championship.
Yeah. But
yeah. So maybe he's the Alabama dynasty is dead.
But
right?
we've never really heard anything from those guys like Kirby Smart or anything about the thing that go behind the scenes.
Because they're doing the same thing.
Because exactly. They have an agreement, because it's like, as soon as your dirty laundry's out there, then everybody's is. You know, it's like, so they keep it all under the, you know.
So it was a miscalculated move by Nick Saban to make a move on his former assistant.
Also within conference, which is a whole another deal. Because now,
in the
like,
same division.
Sankey's probably like, what is happening? Right. I used to have these guys on a tight leash.
I really wish that Texas or the A&M Alabama game was actually in College Station. This year, instead of, you know, they got to go to Tuscaloosa.
Why?
Because I think it'd just be, the energy would be even more amped.
I think both ways it's going to be incredible.
It's going to be amped no matter where it is.
Yeah. I think the only thing that's going to, we're just going to get tired of replaying this press conference for the next, whatever, 100 days or something.
A lot going on during the summer.
They could play that game in Canada and there'd still be 100,000 people there.
All right. Well, we're actually not going to talk about that any longer, but if you tried to tune in last week and you're checking your feed on your whatever podcast app you use, we are sorry. We recorded an incredible 90-minute episode, probably our best.
It was definitely our best ever.
Top tier content, but unfortunately lost forever. There was a short power outage while they were downloading the information, and unfortunately it's gone. Anyway, we broke down a perfect week of games that TCU had against Incarnate Word and Kansas. The baseball gods looked favorably on us this week and provided us with a second perfect week of TCU baseball. So that's what we're going to focus on. We are live in the Flying T studio here at Roxo Media House. I'm your host, Kyle Malloy at YellMK on Twitter, and I am not joined by my co-host, Jacob Sailors. He has been suspended for 7 days for testing positive for PEDs. More to come on that. But we've got the rest of our crew here in-house, Crazy Ray Cartwright, Martin Guerrero, a.k.a. the Sultan of Stat, and of course, our producer, Reed Simpson. Fellas, how was your weekend?
Mine was good, really good. got to watch a lot of frog ball, got to lift a championship trophy. I do have a question for you since last week's pod was lost in the internet, just gone. It's a fugazi. But do you think that Porter Brown ended Coach Price's career in Kansas?
So tell us more about that. So who's Coach Price?
Coach Price is the head coach, which surprisingly...
He was the head coach. Yeah,
he was the head coach. Keyword, he stepped down earlier this week.
Of Kansas.
I was surprised to learn he's been there 20 years. I would have thought, you know, reading Kansas fans' response to him over the last couple of weeks that, you know, he's just been a recent addition to their staff. But
yeah, when you give up 30 runs... What was it? I actually looked up the box score because some of our season highs for the year, and in the game, in addition to 30 runs, there was 30 RBIs, which also it's like okay, we weren't just walking around the bases. Porter Brown went ham. So,
about the Kansas thing, I've seen a lot of Twitter talk from Kansas baseball fans. Really surprised that they have any because
didn't look like it while the games are going on.
Oh man, like everybody. Just everybody just down on Price, and it's like he has been there for 20 years. I mean, he has 3 of the 5 NCAA tournament appearances that they have as a program. So he's had some success there. There really hasn't been any at Kansas.
But Martin, they deserve better.
No, they don't. No, they don't. We didn't make it up to Lawrence, but that stadium is terrible.
It looked bad.
It's so bad, and it's like... Like 99% bleachers. It's, dude, there's JUCO ballparks that have that have way better facilities than Kansas. And then, you know, Price is able to get guys like Skylar Messenger and Maui Ahuna on campus. But then when they get there, it's like, why do I want to play at Kansas baseball? There's so many better facilities around the country.
Well, that makes me think, should we start our campaign to get Maui Ahuna to TCU?
One of our Twitter questions from last week that we didn't get to from Gavin Griffin asks, I need to know how Maui Ahuna got from Hilo to Lawrence. And it's funny, Gavin, because last week that was a legit question. But just a few days ago it was announced that Maui Ahuna has, he is now in the transfer portal. Of course he is. He's the best player on the team. He had a decent weekend against TCU, but has had a great year. I imagine he's going to be
had a plus weekend against TCU. Yeah. He was scoring the only run, and he was making plays in the field all week.
Yeah, the defense was great. The flying Hawaiian out there at shortstop. He's the only one making plays.
Martin is in
hitting
love
home
with
runs.
Him.
So I don't know if
he's hitting like 400.
If you paid attention to the Frogs traveling to Lawrence on the way there, they wore Hawaiian shirts, and I'm hoping that was just a little nod to say Maui, you're always welcome down in Florida.
Pull up.
Okay. So Reed is going to jump in. He's off the mic right now. He's going to go ahead and ask us a question, and we're going to answer it on air. So, and we don't know what that is. Go ahead, Reed.
All right, so I did ask the guys this in the studio. Y'all will hear their answer after I insert this, which I'm asking in post-production. So TCU has won 17 either shared, outright, or conference championships since 2004. So that's 17 in 18 years. Now, some years were doubled up on, say, a regular season and tournament championship. But 17 in 18 years and 17 in 17 years, if you don't count the COVID year that got canceled in 2020. At this point in TCU's baseball history, do you consider TCU to be a true blue blood college baseball program?
I'll take it first to whether or not TCU is a blue blood program or not. I would say they're almost there. I feel like to be a true blue blood, you need a couple of at least a national title.
So is Florida State a blue blood? They never won a national championship.
But I don't really consider, I don't think of Florida State as being, you know, like baseball royalty, college baseball royalty.
So I used to think that way. I used to think Florida State and TCU were not blue bloods because they haven't actually won a national championship. But then I went back and looked at all the shitty teams who have won a national championship, you know, back in the 1850s or whatever.
What about like my Maine Black Bears?
I don't think they've ever won one, but like teams like Minnesota, Minnesota's not a blue blood and they have like 3 national championships.
Wichita State has a national championship.
Wichita State was a blue blood in the 80s. They had like 7 College World Series appearances, an actual natty.
Yeah.
So I think nowadays in the super regional era, I think just making it to Omaha is really close to actually winning a national championship, because it's such a crapshoot once you finally get there. Like, the good teams, the blue blood, the consistently good teams are the ones that go to Omaha every year, year in and year out.
So I think college baseball has a lot more parity than college football does. And so in college football, you can come up with a number of 10 to 15 or whatever that, you know, that cutoff is for you of, these are the true blue blood programs. These are the 15 schools that have a chance to compete for the college play, you know, college football playoff, and maybe win a championship. Now, we're usually 4 or 5, but you could expand it a little bit. With baseball, that pool is much larger. And yeah. And so going back to what you said, where maybe the best team in the country didn't actually win. This is a perfect example is last year, Arkansas comes in just like Tennessee this year, super hot, and loses in their super, doesn't even get to Omaha when they could have had enough arms and bats to actually win the whole thing once they got there.
Right. And, you know, there's a big difference between baseball and football, where in football, you know, there's a FBS, FCS split where they're both still technically Division I, but to get to the national championship, there's only, you know, Power 5 teams, and then maybe like a Cincinnati or a Boise State actually has an opportunity to even make it to the playoffs. Whereas in college baseball, there's over 300 D1 teams. They all play each other. Every game counts the same. They all, you know, there's 4 team baseball conferences that get an auto bid to Omaha. There's been a 4 seed in the NCAA tournament. Fresno State in 2008 won a national championship as a 4 seed.
Yeah. To that point of parity and all that, it made me think of some research I did today. And I found this little note that as of last year, this tournament, it marked the 21st straight year in the NCAA tournament that a number one seed hasn't won in Omaha. And since they expanded the format to super regionals, the number one overall seed. Since they've expanded the super regionals, only 8 times has a number one seed even made it to Omaha.
So you're saying there's a chance for the Frogs?
I'm saying there's a chance.
I just so you guys know, I don't personally believe we're going to get the number one overall seed this year.
I think he's saying there's no chance for Tennessee.
Yeah. Don't bet on Tennessee.
The odds are not in their favor. There's a lot of good teams. I mean, you know, one other team that came out of nowhere, ranked number 2 now in the D1 rankings, is Virginia Tech. And I wasn't thinking about Virginia Tech all year, and they just came out of nowhere.
Oh, Virginia Tech is not a baseball player. Not a blue blood in any sense of the word. This is like the first time they've ever hosted a regional. Or this is the...
What?
Rally tits. Yeah. Rally tits. It made me think of the first time I even heard of Virginia Tech being anything this year was whenever we were in Austin.
Yeah.
And you were convincing Jacob that Virginia Tech is actually a good team.
It was insane.
Illinois.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have teams that pop up and will make this run, and then you haven't seen them for a while, you know? I mean, on the note of TCU, I mean, you could make that same argument for Texas Tech, right? Consistently good, not to the level of being able to really punch through and finish it.
TCU has been, you know, good at a higher level longer than Tech has.
I see where that. I think that TCU is different than Tech is. Reed did the research earlier, may have been last week, where, you know, since joining the Big 12, TCU's won either a share of the conference outright or the conference tournament 7 years. And that's including 2020, which they didn't play at all that year.
Pretty amazing. Another non-blue blood that, you know, we just don't think about it at all. The winners of the Big Ten, Maryland, I mean, out of nowhere, they're ranked number 10. They're the third in RPI. I mean, I didn't even know Maryland had a baseball program.
Something
before
about
this
that
year.
ACC baseball this year, man. Even the teams who left the ACC, now they're dominating dominating the Big Ten. Maryland had not won the ACC since 1971. And then like 5 years into the Big Ten and they're dominating. That's crazy. I mean, that's another team who I mean, I've seen their stadium in like highlight videos or whatever. It's not impressive.
Did you
at
see?
All.
I saw today on Twitter where they actually added more bleacher stands
they
to their stadium
to, so that
for
they
regionals.
Host. Yeah,
is that right? They were required to just from like a.
I think you have to have a certain amount. Like,
there's like a cutoff
attendance,
if you want to host.
Great question, Reed. I think this is that's a good one for the off season as well. We can revisit maybe with some actual statistics and back it up with stuff. So let's take a quick break. We'll jump into just kind of a summary of what happened over the weekend and then move on to the fun stuff. We'll be right back.
Long drink is good.
Welcome back to Post Game Beers. We are going to quickly recap the games and talk about what they meant for Frog Ball. So first, midweek game on Tuesday. Oh, wait. Canceled. Sorry, Tarleton. Guys, you agree or disagree with this move?
Agree. In fact, me and Martin were talking about it last Monday. This isn't something new for TCU. Last year, they canceled their last three Tuesday night games. Now, one of them was weather-related, but the other two, I assume, was RPI related. Schloss just said the loud part or the quiet part loud this season, and you know where he didn't really explain it last year.
What was Tarleton? They were
250.
Yeah, they
so
were.
So basically, winning a game against Tarleton State on Tuesday actually drops TCU's RPI.
I don't think it drops it. It just really doesn't do anything.
It doesn't do anything for you. And on the very slim chance that you actually, you know, something crazy happens and you lose, that's awful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it could affect you because it affects your strength of schedule.
Well, if you, so RPI, so every game is like you get points based off what you do. So, you know, you get a certain number of points for beating, you know, Team X, and you get there's like multipliers for if it's a neutral site game, if it's on the road, if it's at home, you get less points. So I think it would have been like 1 point if we would have beat them, which is almost nothing. Yeah. And like
you see some teams, if they have a good series, they'll move up like 20 or 30 points, you know.
Yeah, I think Oklahoma in one of their games against Tech was like 51 points or something like that. So
yeah. So game got canceled, but it was not the only cancellation on Tuesday. There was probably a dozen of them, I would say, around the country.
Notre Dame does it every year.
Well, they didn't. They canceled an entire series.
Yeah.
They said, and they said logistical reasons, which we know was BS.
What does that even mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it makes me think of this weekend with Santa Clara. That's real logistical, and they still found a way to get it in.
Right.
I mean, you've seen games earlier this year up in the Midwest. People. Teams playing in the snow. Yeah. And, you know, Notre Dame is not shy to cancel a midweek game or whatever because they know they play in the ACC and they know just playing those games is going to boost their RPI.
Wasn't there a Louisville game earlier this year where it was almost whiteout conditions and they were still playing?
I think that's the game I remember that it was snowing. Yeah. So speaking of Santa Clara, they visited Thursday, Friday, Saturday for a weekend series, the last series at home and for the season for the Frogs. Thursday, Frogs win 7-6 in the closest game of the weekend. Santa Clara was actually leading after six innings, but Frogs pulled away towards the end. And there was a late push by the Broncos, but Luke Savage came in and really just held on and had a great finish to the game. So more importantly, outside of the TCU-Santa Clara game, like most Frog fans, we were scoreboard watching the entire night. So at the same time, we had Oklahoma at Texas Tech. And in kind of a surprise game, the Sooners actually took care of business out in Lubbock. They beat the Red Raiders 13-8. And additionally, we're watching Oklahoma State play at Baylor. Kind of a back-and-forth game. Oklahoma State was up by, was it 9 or 10 runs?
I think it was 9.
It was 9 runs. And the Bears come back, have a huge late inning, and end up walking off on a home run and beating Oklahoma State. So what this means is Oklahoma State loses that game. They are no longer in contention for even a tie of the Big 12 title. So that was enormous. The second thing that happened was Oklahoma beating Tech. That was big. Had Tech swept the Sooners, they could have won the Big 12 outright. If Tech won two games, they would have tied, having a share of that title, had Oklahoma won two games. And we're going to talk about kind of what they did the next few nights. But so for that, for Oklahoma to kind of come in and get that first win, that was almost a perfect night to be a Frog fan.
It really was. And I would like to say a shout out to Bo Wimpy, a former Frog, transferred to Baylor and was a big part of that comeback.
I think the most important thing I forgot was that because of those three results, at a minimum, TCU earned a share of the Big 12 title.
Yep, they did clinch a share that night.
Even though some people were saying it's not true yet because the games weren't over, but whatever.
When OU beat Tech, that's when we clinched a share.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
I was actually getting kind of worried. So it was basically, it happened early, what we needed to happen. Like Baylor beat Oklahoma State on Thursday, and then OU beat Tech on Friday, or on Thursday as well. And then Oklahoma beat Tech again on Friday, and I'm like, stop winning.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a second.
Moving on to Friday's game, Santa Clara game two. Frogs won that one 10-3, much easier game. Marcelo went six innings. It was 10-0 before the Broncos put anything on the board. Eli and Luke Boyers each recorded their 100th hit, so congratulations to those guys. And then again, we're scoreboard watching. So OU wins the second game. They actually win the series in Lubbock, and we're thinking, cool. But if you win another game, then Oklahoma is going to take the number one seed in the Big 12 tournament.
Right. And that's something I thought, that if things were going to break right for TCU in that Tech-Oklahoma series, I thought Friday would be the game that Tech would get. They were throwing Birdsell. That's their best pitcher. Has been all year. And Oklahoma just hammered them.
So at this point, we're going into Saturday cheering for Tech. We want Tech to win that last game.
Guns up.
Because at this point, the share of the title is still in play. So game three, Santa Clara versus the Frogs. Frogs went 9-1. Kind of a slow game for a few innings. It was hot. It was there was a little bit of cloud cover, but it was just, that was the last day when it was like dense and muggy.
Not much of a breeze.
Yeah,
either.
No breeze. But the Broncos had a few opportunities to score a bunch of runs, but the Frogs held them down, and they never did. Porter Brown goes 3-for-4. Mr. May just absolutely on fire right now. Tommy Sacco hits bombs to left and right field on senior day.
On his birthday.
And then Riley bombs. Cornelio, which was great to see him go six full, pretty efficient innings to kind
of
do that.
That was probably the best thing to see out of that game is Riley look like Riley again.
Yeah, so. And we'll talk more about kind of the pitching moving forward, but we've had a lot of issues, right? There's been a lot of injuries. We've had a lot of changes in the starters and who's coming in at first relief, who's going to be our closer. That has changed throughout the season. And so to have two games where starters went six innings, I think that was a really good sign moving into the tournament.
You know, we've had injuries this year, but they've been cluster injuries, right? And what I mean by that is it's just been to really one position, and that's been the staff. You know, the lineup's been pretty much consistent all year.
Maxwell.
Yeah, Logan Maxwell. But, you know, he was kind of platooning. They feel like they were still trying to figure out left field, even whenever he got hurt. But to lose Krobe and then Riley,
so
it's tough.
So moving on, the Frogs go 3-0 for the weekend, which is a great sign. And at that point, we are glued to the TV watching Tech and Oklahoma, just cheering for Tech. You know, and eventually they pull away. They take that last game of the series, which clinches the outright title for the Frogs. They bring the trophy down. I know that at that point we didn't know the results of the game, but still, Donati came down, presented the trophy. Ray, you and Reed were there. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, that was really cool after the game. You know, have Jeremiah come down there. You know, he's just glowing about the team. Of course, why wouldn't you? You know, they just won a Big 12 title. You know, and then me and Reed made our way down to the field, and we talked to Jeremiah for a little bit. Talked to Kurt. Got a picture with our two beardy boys, Gray and Sacco. You know, and
gonna miss those guys.
I know it's gonna be weird next year not seeing those two up the middle.
You might get emotional, Ray.
You know, I feel like they've been such a big part, and I was talking to Gray's mom during the game, and I kind of lumped Sacco and Gray in with last year's senior class. You know, that super senior class. You know, they had an extra year. And it's just, that's an era of, a golden era of TCU baseball, you know, that's overturning you.
We'll talk about the success that Tommy Sacco had specifically and kind of what that means for, you know, all conference teams and things like that. But outside of what we've talked about so far, Martin, anything from the weekend that you were pleased with, any concerns you had afterwards with pitching, defense, hitting, whatever?
No, we played great. And, you know, Braden looked good, hit a triple. That looked good. And another double. He looks like he's getting hot. Obviously, Porter Brown's hot. Man, I would just say, you know, we've had so much success in the Big 12 in conference. How could you pick anybody else but TCU to win the conference tournament? I think we're hot right now.
Yeah.
One thing that I was kind of noticing over the weekend and kind of noticed throughout the year, name me a left side of the infield, either nationally or in the Big 12, that has stronger arms than Sacco and Taylor.
I can't. I haven't watched every team, I'll be honest, but
I haven't watched every team.
They do have strong arms. I mean, how many errors I think have they had the entire season? Probably it's got to be less than.
Yeah, we were talking
three?
About that in the stands. How many of the errors this year were just pitcher related?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think both Sacco and Braden, I think they've cut their error totals in half just from last year.
They always look good. Every time it's hit to that side, I assume they're going to make the play, you know.
And that's probably been Braden's biggest development this year, because last year, you know, he'd kind of one hop, wouldn't always get it to first, especially on those long throws, where this year they're just darts.
So all in all, it was almost an ideal weekend from a conference standing standpoint. TCU wins all three games, and everything falls into place perfectly to win the title.
Almost an ideal? I would say that was that broke perfectly.
I was a little warm on Saturday. That's all. Yeah. If it was just maybe 20 degrees cooler.
That felt great Saturday night once that cold front came through.
It would have been perfect. Fun weekend, and we will get into the Big 12 tournament, kind of seating there. We'll talk about some other things as we move forward right after this quick break. By now, you guys know that we are sponsored by Sarlos & Sons Family Farm and Vineyard. Our guy Keith, the emperor of the grape, has been willing to and able to help us out since day one. Based on their wine menu that displays availability, they don't need our help to sell their product. But we don't want you to miss out on some of the merchandise on their site as well. So head on over to sarlosandsons.com/gifts and get the limited edition Sarlos & Sons Texas Edition hat. And by the way, guys, it's purple. And it's almost gone. So go check them out today. Welcome back to Post Game Beers. Well, let's shoot it over to Ray for a little segment we title Ray's World.
Thank you, MK. This week I want to talk to you about, took a little road trip with Martin last Monday as, we took a little bit of a drive up to Wichita, Kansas to watch, to encourage the Oklahoma Sooners as they took on Wichita State.
And it worked.
It worked. Didn't look promising if you were watching that game as they got beat 18-0.
That was insane.
Oklahoma lost.
They had one hit and one walk in the game. Damn near got no hit.
The team that almost won the Big 12.
Yeah.
But so that was my first time up to Wichita to see the Shockers, and they have actually a pretty impressive ballpark. Really, really enjoyed taking in baseball there. It was a crisp night in the upper 60s. I was almost a little chilly. I was joking with Martin, I was going to have to go buy a hoodie in the pro shop.
Dude, it was like 20 degrees cooler in Wichita than it was in Fort Worth.
Very refreshing. Their ballpark, you know, we had talked about earlier in the podcast about Wichita State. They used to be a blue blood program back in the 80s. They have a really, really big ballpark, really open. I think it seats, what, about 8,000 or so?
7,851.
That's a couple thousand more than TCU, right?
Yeah, almost. I think TCU...
Once you squeeze everyone
into the berm or whatever, you can get up there in the 6,000 to 7,000 range. But they won't all have seats like at Shocker Stadium. I don't know what they call it.
Eck Stadium.
Eck. So that was a really cool ballpark. They have a great scoreboard there that Wichita State during the game just kept pelting. You'd have black rectangles up there for half an inning or so before they could reset it. But I want to bring Martin in because Martin loves these random ballpark trips to go see random college baseball teams. So, Martin, I want to ask you, what's been some of your favorite random college baseball trips you've taken?
Well, I mean, Wichita State was up there. I mean, that's a ballpark I've been wanting to go to for a while. I was really upset last time TCU played there. Was that 5 years ago?
2015, I think we looked it up. It was in 2015.
It was like 5 or 6 years ago. But yeah, I really wanted to go and make that trip. Wichita State has a lot of baseball history as far as, you know, in the 80s when they were just killing it. 7 College World Series appearance, national championship in 1989. That stadium was built in 1985, you know, during that run. And you can tell, I mean, it's a huge ballpark.
Right.
So just imagine, you know, back in the day, back in the 80s, going to that ballpark, they're playing somebody, you know, Oklahoma State. I'm sure they're playing a lot of games at Oklahoma State. They were a powerhouse in the 80s as well. Just imagine, you know, going to a game with, you know, Robin Ventura and what's his name? Pete Incaviglia or something, you know?
I can't imagine how loud that stadium could get. Dude, if everything's just full. They've got, like, yeah, bleacher stands out on both sides of the outfield, too. Yeah.
Right field feels like a park.
Yeah.
When we walked into the ballpark, it's a nice ballpark.
Gazebos everywhere.
It's very 80s because yep. It's, like, where more is, you know, more. It's, like, very suburb. Like, you know, it's just huge and, like, you know, it was definitely like the fad back then or whatever, but it's kind of dated, but it was still pretty cool to go.
They've done a good job maintaining it.
Yeah. It's not like, I've been to some really bad ballparks, like like Stephen F. Austin. I think they play like at a Little League field.
So that means TCU plays at a Little League field.
Why?
Well, because they play there, right? Do they ever play at Stephen F. Austin? Or do they always?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sometimes TCU plays there.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
They'll usually play on the way back from Shriners or something like that.
They're playing in these stadiums, too, yeah, which is unfortunate.
Like, that's the reason I went down to Nacogdoches was to see a midweek game against Stephen F. Austin. I'm thinking, you know, I didn't look anything up, and, you know, I'm driving over. It was like 4 or 5 hours, and I'm like, I hope it looks nice, and then I find out, you know, it's not even on campus. It's like some complex. There's literally like Little League fields right next to that field with Little League games going on. And
they have more fans in the stands over there.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. But
so I don't want to jump ahead if you have got more, Ray, but speaking of stadium and expansion and all that stuff, we had a Twitter question. It's not exactly the direction I want to go, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So Mitch Bartko at Bartko Mitch asks, when do you think Lady Frog softball will finally be a thing? And will Lupton also get an update / renovation if they construct a softball field? So I'm going to start with the first question, and I'm pretty positive that Lady Frog softball will not be a thing.
I'll let Martin take this because we talked about that very question on the way up to Wichita.
Yeah, we did. I don't think it's likely, but one of the recent events in college baseball that's come up is they're trying to get rid of this. What is it?
The 11.7.
Yeah, the 11.7 scholarship limit.
Rule. Yep.
So they're trying to like get rid of that and just leave it up to the conferences. So if there is more scholarships for baseball, you know, due to Title IX, you know, we have to come up with an equal amount for mm-hmm. women. I don't know what our, you know, men to female scholarship
ratio is. They would put those scholarships, whether it was golf or right. swimming or
yeah, that's
something.
That's another thing. Soccer. Is I don't know what women's sports we don't have that might have more backing than softball, but with the with the scholarship limit being waived, that might be something that could lead us to.
You know, I've never thought about it because I didn't know if softball was ever a possibility. But then you see Oklahoma State, Texas, Oklahoma, like all these Big 12 schools have a ton of success.
Oklahoma is a powerhouse.
Oh yeah, Oklahoma's a powerhouse, but all of them are good. There's a bunch of them in the you know, in the supers this
and that's
next weekend.
That's kind of a thing. Like, do we have enough backing, like fan support, to start a brand new softball team in such a league that's
already
loaded?
I can tell you the LDC would be there to back them.
But speaking of the stadium part, I think the issue is that we still have a really nice stadium. And so we were sitting in the second row talking to Lee.
Right.
He's, you know, we're chatting about the stadium and kind of just, I was just asking questions about renovations or whatever, and not really had anything in mind. But, you know, he mentioned it'd be nice to have some more boxes. I think we have a limited number of boxes. But the size of our stadium is perfectly fine until you get to a major super and it's sold out. But until then, on Tuesday nights, there's still open seats. On Friday nights, there's still open seats. And so expanding, like Wichita State did a bunch of times, is not necessarily the answer. Upgrading completely, it's a lot of money, and we have a really nice stadium still.
Right. You know, it's a really nice stadium. I think, you know, it's the player facilities are top of the line. It's a great, as far as on the field, you know, it's a great ballpark. I think the only things that are lacking is like the fan amenity type stuff, like, you know, more shade, more what are they called, seat backs.
Yeah, I was gonna say
better concourses,
widen the concourse, maybe a couple more concession stand lines.
Press box, like Reed said, needs to be updated.
The suites.
So one of the things that Lee said, he goes 3 or 4 years ago, we had a couple older alums like him, right, that were pushing for a new stadium or massive renovations, and they were just pushing. And he said, "Now they all died." so he's like that. He goes, "That kind of talk." He goes, "That kind of talk has basically been in the last year. It's kind of gone away." And Kirk, who, you know, it's his first year, I'm sure he's got plenty of ideas and things that he wants to do in the future. I don't think that's been his first priority at all. You know,
to the fan experience. You know, one of the best things he's done this year is the seat upgrade after the conclusion of the third inning. You know, he wants those seats, those empty seats, filled, you know, especially in the lower bowl.
And if you're listening to this and you didn't know about that, in the third inning, if there's empty seats available and you're sitting in GA, we want you down in those seats to be, you know, yelling and screaming like idiots.
Yeah, come hang
like
out
us.
With us in 107.
That's right.
Only if you're rooting for the Frogs.
Yeah.
Ray, anything else from the road trip to Wichita?
No, just a very long day trip to make. we left at like 11:30 and got back around 2:30 in the morning.
Oh, goodness.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty late.
Glad you guys got back safely.
Not the craziest one I've ever done. remember when we were talking about that guy, Texas College Baseball?
Yeah.
That he's been to all 22 or something?
Yes.
I did the math the other day. And I think I'm just short like 7 to, I think I've seen 15.
That's a good goal for you next year.
Yeah.
You know?
Let's get Martin.
I really need Kurt.
Get Martin to 22.
I need Kurt to schedule a home and home with Lance Berkman. he's the head coach at Houston Baptist, because I really need a reason to go down there.
You know, who knows? Maybe so the Frogs play at Shriner next year.
Yeah, but I'm going to want to go to Shriner.
Well, okay. I'm saying maybe that Tuesday. Because they always schedule a game down in that region, you know, whether it's
Maybe
Houston.
You could go to the morning game at Houston Baptist and then, you know, Frogs play at night, something like that.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. All right. So, Martin, what else you got? Let's talk baseball.
Okay. last week, I'm just going to go real quick. I'm not going to expand on it like I did last week. We talked about Luke Boyers and Elijah Nunez and the improvements that they've made. You know, one of the biggest things that I've seen from both of them is just when they get that pitch to hit, you know, they're swinging at it. They're not, you know, they're not always waiting for that perfect pitch, you know, working the count, just like what they did last year. And it resulted in a lot of strikeouts because, you know, when you get that pitch to hit early in that bat, you might not see one again. So really seeing that from Luke Boyers after he was moved from the two hole to the seventh hole, a lot more, you know, just when he gets that pitch, he's just smashing it. I noticed it against Santa Clara, I think on Friday or Saturday, probably Saturday. Luke Boyers comes in. First pitch, I mean, it was a fastball, like, right down the middle, and he smacks it. I think it was a line drive out, but, you know, you don't really want the entire lineup of guys to swing at the first pitch and, you know, one pitch, one out. But I don't know. It didn't really bother me because, you know, he's had his issues in the past where, you know, he just works himself too deep into the count and doesn't get a pitch to hit. But I think I'd rather have him just swing at that first good pitch and see what he can do with it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I would much rather him do that than try to work deep into a count where then he's seeing breaking balls and stuff in the dirt where he's, you know, he might offer up and swing at that. But, you know, if he takes that first pitch, lines out, okay. Well,
yeah.
If he does that, you know, that's going to eventually find a hole.
Right. Next time it could be a home run.
Yeah. It's going to work out in your favor, you know, what, 30% of the time or so.
Yeah. If you hit the ball hard, you're going to get hits. You're going to get, you know, you're going to score runs. You're going to bring runs in. I feel like last year he was more of like, he just more of like a slap hitter, like, you know, got a lot of bloops. And this year he's just hitting the ball with so much more authority.
Mm-hmm. So one in overall, Luke Boyers had the sixth best batting average on the team. But when you talk about conference only, he's number three, only behind Tommy Sacco and Porter Brown.
Yeah.
So once you made that move, I want to say it was, I don't think it was for Baylor, but maybe the weekend before that. So right before conference play, you move him to that seven hole and he's really thrived.
Yeah. I think it had to have been the Army series is when I think it first happened. And he had that walk off home run.
Yeah.
And
I think it was after we got back from Kentucky.
Yep. Yeah. So that was it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And then Porter Brown in May.
Mr. May.
So this year he's batting .424 and he's slugging .787. That'll do it.
That'll play.
Yeah, that'll play. So going into
May, reminder, he was the Big 12 tournament MVP.
Yeah.
Right? Last year?
Yeah.
So it's like it's par for the course. It's like he's doing the exact same thing as he did last year. I think he
also made
the Fort Worth All Regional. Yeah. Nice consolation prize.
On April 30th, he was batting either .204 or .209. I can't read my handwriting, but now he's batting .293. So that's it's almost like 90. Weeks. Yeah, that's almost 100% or 100 point bump in May's not over. No. So then I went back and I added last year's what he did in May because he's been here 4 years now, but his first year he had a shoulder injury,
mm-hmm.
and then 2020 was COVID. So that was 2 years in a row for him that he didn't make it out of the month of March. He didn't play any games after March. So if you include last year, what he's hitting in May, he's batting .407 with a .479 on base percentage, and he's slugging .666.
Goodness gracious.
Insert the Wolf of Wall Street gif of Leonardo DiCaprio biting his fist.
Yeah.
Not including getting the coach fired.
So. to that point, I think people have made the joke, you know, we've joked about, you know, Porter Brown heats up once the semester is over with.
Right.
Once he's finished with that heavy neuroscience course load.
And he was honored on Saturday for senior day, got that neuroscience degree. I would imagine, what do we think he's going to be here for another year?
He's still got 2 years of eligibility left.
Yeah, but it's more of like, so with Porter Brown, it's more like personal, not really baseball reasons. So like,
does he want to play?
Right.
Does he want to move on to the next stage?
He may just, I know Jamie asked him the other day if he was going to go to medical school starting next year. And they have a completely different academic calendar than, you know, your regular institution does. You said he was undecided at this point.
Anything else, Martin? That was good stuff.
Marcelo Perez, 12-3. TCU's record when he's
been the savior.
You know, if you asked an average TCU baseball fan who goes to some games, they would not know that he's been that good. They just wouldn't.
Especially this year with, you know, we started the year with Krobe, Riley and Brett Walker in the rotation, and there's been a couple weeks where none of those guys were in the rotation, and you know, we still win the Big 12, and he's been a huge part. He went 6-1 in the Big 12 games that he pitched in.
I think we should mention too, Cam Brown's May,
yeah,
and how he's really turned it around, and feel like he's turned over a new leaf and is rounding into that pitcher that you know we think he can be. Because right. he's got the best stuff on the team. It's just, you know, putting it all together. And that's just another key arm that's going to be available for you come postseason play.
Do you guys know how they do the pitching nominations and selections for all conference teams? And the reason I bring that up is, so Luke Savage has had an amazing year. His overall ERA is 1.82. In conference, it's 0.78. And so I just find that very impressive.
I think they do overall stats, not just what you did in conference.
Okay. But does he have a chance to be on as a relief yeah. pitcher? Okay.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think Halen was, wasn't he a first team?
Yeah, he was first team.
Three starters, two relievers, and a closer. On first team, second team, and...
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, Luke Savage, second team? I think that, I don't know.
He can make it first team.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, talk about the Big 12 tournament, talk about seeding a little bit, and then answer a few more Twitter questions and get out of here. We'll be back. Postgame beers brought to you by Long Drink. Long Drink is the top-selling category of alcohol in Finland. The roots of Long Drinks go back to the 1952 Summer Games in Finland. This is now a legendary drink that's been brought to you all the way to America, which is where we live, by the next generation of Finns who want to show the world an experience of the refreshing, unique Finnish long drink. Try it out, guys. We love it. Welcome back to Post Game Beers. Let's chat Big 12 tournament. So Frogs get the number one seed, and I'll just throw them down in order. Number two, we have Texas Tech. Three is Oklahoma. Four is Oklahoma State. Five is Texas, which is kind of funny. Six is West Virginia, seven Kansas State, and rounding out the top eight, Baylor. Way to go, Bears. So the Frogs will take on the Bears on Wednesday at 12:30. There's actually a game before that, the 4 and 5 seed, so that's Oklahoma State and Texas, will play at 9 a.m. on Wednesday. So that's the top bracket, Texas, Oklahoma State, Baylor, TCU. Who comes out of that one, guys?
TCU, duh.
So who wins between Texas and Oklahoma State? I mean, you wonder if Oklahoma State's going to pitch, what's his name?
They got to pitch Justin Campbell.
If it's going to be Campbell versus Hansen, that's going to be a war.
Man, I'm going to have to wake up early.
It's going to be an early game.
But coming out of it, I would say Texas. I think they're playing the better ball right
now.
So? I feel like they are. I feel like offensively they've kind of gotten their wheels back on.
Yeah.
You know, Pete Hansen.
Yeah, but Justin Campbell is Justin Campbell.
So you think Texas is going to win the game or come out of the bracket?
No, win the game.
Gotcha. Okay. Just want to clarify. I didn't know you were picking against the Frogs, Ray, but you're not. Okay.
Of course not.
In the other bracket, you've got Kansas State matching up against Texas Tech in the afternoon, and then West Virginia playing Oklahoma, who nobody really wants to play Oklahoma right now. They're kind of on a hot streak. So I would imagine this comes down to likely Texas Tech versus Oklahoma. What do you guys think?
More than likely, yes. I think Tech easily handles Kansas State. The Oklahoma-West Virginia game will be a little interesting. They play kind of a similar style in baseball, at least offensively.
I don't think so.
Small ball, don't really, speed, walks a
lot. West Virginia's small ball. I think Oklahoma's more money ball. They get walks and they hit doubles and home runs.
I stand corrected.
West Virginia, oh, man, so many things would have to go right for them to beat Oklahoma. I just don't see it.
Who's Oklahoma's Friday night guy that's pretty good?
It's that lefty. I don't know his name.
So, like, just this is set up exactly the same as basically a regional or a super regional where there's a massive advantage if you win the first two games because then you get an entire day off. Yeah. If you don't, you could potentially play five games versus three?
Right.
Yeah. So pretty big difference.
Yeah. Three going into the championship,
right? And which is funny because in the championship, that's what on Sunday, Saturday or Sunday, and
championship Sunday afternoon.
Everyone's pretty wiped out at that point.
Your pitching's pretty much wiped out at
that
point.
That's what I mean. Do you pitch your starter from game one at that point? Can they go that soon afterwards?
So
I know some teams will do it. I'm not sure if TCU would.
I don't think TCU will throw. We probably all consider Marcelo their best.
They're not going to pitch him against Baylor, though, right?
No. Yeah. I would imagine you probably see Cam Brown start against Baylor. Maybe he can atone because for his last start against Baylor, which didn't go so
that's
well.
Was that when Brett Walker came in and kind of settled things? He pitched on Sunday. Yeah, who came in after Cam Brown? Was that Riley? Marcelo came in. Came in? And that's when he kind of established himself?
Well, I know the West Virginia game.
West Virginia, Marcelo came in right after Cam. The Baylor game, I don't think it was Marcelo right after Cam because Marcelo was pitching like into extra innings or something.
One of the questions, we're going to jump ahead and let's pretend that TCU does really well. They win a few games, maybe win the championship in the tournament. We got a couple questions related to this. So Frogs Are Rolling asks, what's the highest seed y'all think we could get if we win the Big 12 tournament? And what, we can answer that one right there. So right now, TCU they jumped up to ranked 18th in the nation by D1. Unfortunately, what's working against the team is a low RPI. And when we say low, they are in the mid 30s, which is not super helpful. Typically, a host site has to do a few things. They can have a really good RPI, extremely good, and do well in their conference and tournament. Or if you're in a really good conference, the SEC, the ACC, the Big 12, if you win that conference, there's a good shot that you're going to at least host a regional. And I think that's working in TCU's favor is that we just won the top or with the third best RPI league in the nation. And so D1 believes, and I think we agree on that we have a pretty good chance of hosting at a minimum a regional. If we went out and lost the first two games in a row, maybe that changes. But to go into a national seed, which is, again, a top eight team in the nation, if they win the Big 12 tournament and then have the whole conference, they have both of those under their belt, that's still a tall ask.
It is, but to the RPI question, if you win the Big 12 tournament, you're getting wins over RPI teams that are ahead of you right now, like Texas or Oklahoma State or even Oklahoma. And that should boost your RPI even more. That maybe
100%
brings you into that at least maybe the top 25.
Hey guys, Reed here. So I have a thought about TCU getting a top eight. They go out and they win the conference tournament. Look, I think our RPI will just never be good enough in a regular year to get top eight. It just doesn't matter. We have to hope that the committee just throws that out and takes into account that we won outright the third best conference and then backed that up and went and won the tournament. I don't think RPI is going to get there. We just have to hope that the committee really considers the conference.
Thank you, Reed.
Martin, what you got? You going to battle Reed out for that? What do you think?
No. so I believe back in 2017, Texas A&M was a national seed. I think there was a 7th seed. I think their RPI was around 33, somewhere around where we are. So it's not out of the question that we could get a national seed.
Not out of the question. You have to win the Big 12 tournament, in my opinion.
Yes.
Probably, yeah.
Definitely.
Or, if you get all the way to the final and you lose, like, by one run, are they really going to hold that much against you?
Yeah.
I don't even think then they would get a national seed. They would get a better regional spot than
I disagree. I don't think just winning it is be all end all. I think as long as you don't go in there and go like 0-2 or 1-2, I think as long as we avoid that, I think we'll still get a national seed.
Yes.
Now if we win it.
Thanks for the comment, Ray.
There's a little dead air.
Yeah, no kidding. So anything else on the tournament? Again, games start at Globe Life on Wednesday.
Yeah, we can talk about how we expect the pitching to be
that's right
to go. That was one of the Twitter questions.
Owen G Frog at T Baron 9206.
So the question was how high we could get a national seed?
What's the highest seed y'all think we could get?
It'd be still around 8.
I'd say 8?
I'd say 8.
Maybe 7.
Yeah.
At the very best. That's best case.
7 would scenario. Be.
So, yeah. So Tennessee would be, they probably locked up the one seed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Say that, then we got Virginia Tech.
How close is Oregon State to them?
They're third.
They just lost a series.
Yeah, but if they do well in the tournament, they could still get a top 8 seed.
Oh, that's a new thing this year is the Pac-12
has a baseball tournament.
So, I mean, Tennessee's up there. See, Virginia Tech's number 2 in the top 25 right now. You think they got a top 8 locked up?
Yes.
Let's see, Stanford?
Yes.
What,
unless they lose 2 in the Pac-12.
Depends on how the Pac-12 tournament goes. Maybe if they get to the final and, you know, they battle it out with Oregon State or so in the final.
They're number 3 in the rankings and they're number 6 in RPI. They're
Oregon State? National seed?
Yes.
Oregon State, yes.
Yeah.
They're top.
I did Stanford, and now we're doing Oregon.
They're top 5 in both.
Texas A&M?
Man. No.
You don't think they're a lock for national seed?
No. I think if they have a decent tournament, they are a lock.
Okay, yes. I mean, it's all tournament dependent. I would say as of right now, I wouldn't consider them a national seed. Their RPI isn't that great.
Yeah, their RPI is 22.
I think people have just fallen in love with what they've done lately, and maybe the committee will be like that too.
Yeah, there's a lot of recency bias in this committee.
I mean, lately they've won like 7 SEC series in a row or something.
I mean, were they tied with Arkansas or
they finished one game ahead.
They won the SEC West.
So they won the SEC West?
Right. The SEC East is, I think, better overall, but that's still impressive.
Right. You know?
SEC West was kind of, not like you would think of the bear that it normally is.
But you still have LSU, Arkansas. I mean, Mississippi State was trash this year, but Ole Miss made a push at the end, too.
I mean, they were still really good, and they played, Texas A&M just swept Vanderbilt, so they were playing some teams from the East.
Well, Vanderbilt's kind of down this year, too.
I think if A&M wins a couple games in the tournament, they're a lock for a national seed. So
they're fifth.
It's challenging because if the Frogs host, then of course we're going to get matched up.
These national seeds are filling up quick.
Yeah, I guess the biggest question is how many national seeds does the ACC get? Because the next two teams are Miami and Louisville. Now, I don't think they have anything locked up, but
both are top 10 in ranking and RPI.
Yeah, they probably have a better foot than we do.
They're so not going to have 3 ACC teams as a national seed.
Why not? They're the number 1 team in conference RPI. They got 11 potential teams in the tournament. 11 out of 64.
I'm not saying 11, that the ACC 11, is
was that 11 of their 14 teams or 13 teams that play baseball? I don't think Syracuse does.
10 of them are in Notre the top Dame. 25 in RPI too.
Right.
I can't picture the ACC getting 3 teams as national seeds.
It's happened before with the SEC. I know that. Big 12.
SEC bias, though.
I'm not sure if the Big 12. I feel like there was a year when Tech, Oklahoma State, and TCU had one, but it might have been too many. Maybe they all three made it to Omaha. Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, Big 12 had 2 last year in Texas and TCU.
They're going to spread the love. They're not going to give one. You know, they may not give 3 to 1 conference. That's a lot.
They might.
But if you have 2 SEC, 2 ACC, 1 Big 12, 1 Pac-12, then you got 2 more up for grabs. I mean,
what if Oklahoma State goes out and wins this tournament?
Do they get a national seed?
I would think so. I feel like they would be like TCU last year.
Oklahoma State is Texas Tech is ranked 8th. Oklahoma State's right behind them, ranked 9th. So they are our 2 highest ranked teams in the Big 12, and their RPIs are also better. Their RPIs are better.
I got a wrench to throw into your spread the love argument. What about Maryland?
They're top 5 RPI, right?
They're 10th in the ranking. They're 44-10. They dominated the Big 10. What's their RPI? I think they're top 5.
They are.
But I think
they're 3.
What they're holds three. A team like Maryland back? Man, the big... they're not going to go any higher. I bet you after playing the Big Ten tournament, their RPI is actually going to drop.
If they win it, though, I don't
even
know.
Even if they
I
win it.
If they win, if they win the conference and the tournament.
They're playing shitty teams.
Yeah. They've been playing shitty teams all year.
It's like,
and they've been winning like 44 and 10.
DBU conundrum.
Hey, one thing we don't have to worry about anymore, though, is one of those mid-major, like Southern Miss has dropped off. They've dropped off the national seed map. So
no, Georgia Southern. Texas State is 11th. But I think they have an RPI issue as well.
Let's just hope Texas State doesn't get in the TCU regional. All right, so
I say bring it.
On this topic, ONG Frog at T-Baron 9206, he asked two questions. I'm going to ask the second one first. How many wins secures the regional host? We've been talking around it, but we believe at this point that Frogs have locked up a regional host. If they go 0-2 in the Big 12 tournament, maybe that changes.
I'm skeptical. I'd like to see two wins at the very least.
Yeah, two or three wins, good. I think, locks up a top regional. 16 seed, yeah.
First question he asks is, or he or she, I'm making an assumption, pitching rotation for the tournament. So we started that against Baylor, you likely don't want to pitch your ace. You probably don't want Marcelo out there. So maybe we start with Cam Brown.
Yeah, probably Cam, then Marcelo, then Riley.
That's how I would go. It's, you know, I don't think they would throw Riley. You know, he's only had it'd only be a couple days rest. Well, I guess they played on Saturday, not Sunday.
So right. Is that what the rotation was? Thursday, Friday, Saturday, was that Cam, Marcelo, and Riley?
Yeah.
So best case scenario,
he probably did that for a reason.
Best case scenario, you win the first two, you have a day off. You pitch Riley. He has a great game. You get into the championship. Who starts in the championship game?
Well, that's a mighty presumptuous. I'll say the Big 12 title game. Take one step at a time.
Well, that's what I meant.
I know. I'm just giving you
shit. The Big 12 championship game. Who starts? Because it's...
You could theoretically have Cam come back and start that Big 12 title game.
Think so?
Sunday afternoon from Wednesday?
Maybe.
Like 4 days of rest.
Yeah, but TCU doesn't really do that. Teams like DBU or Southern Miss or whatever, I mean, they'll throw him 3 days in a row.
I guess it depends on how many innings he goes, because if Cam goes three, then he should be fine. Right.
But if he's only going three innings, we've got problems.
Well, let's say all three of the starters went deep. Who's the fourth guy?
Brett Walker?
Okay. Caleb Bolden.
Brett Walker? Caleb Bolden?
We've seen.
I would say Caleb Bolden over Brett Walker.
I mean, a starter that we haven't seen on a weekend, but he started a lot, was Caden Parker.
I wouldn't want Caden Parker.
You wouldn't want Caden Parker.
Tell me that.
No, I'm
Tell
saying just because of he's a freshman, right?
Yeah, but you know, in these conference tournament games, late in the tournaments, everybody's hungry for pitching. Yeah. It's not like we got guys throwing seven innings every game. I mean, when it gets, especially in the championship game, you kind of piece it together.
Okay, I would piece it. I would if Caden was to start, I'd only throw him three innings.
Okay.
Only three.
I agree.
Because this year, his track record, he's been pretty good through three into four, and then the wheels start kind of coming off as you get deeper.
Yeah, you could use like an opener, maybe Cademan. You could bring in, if Cademan struggles, you got guys
you still have Brett.
Hunter Toplansky.
Caleb Bolden and you could bring in Caleb if he struggles, and then if he does his three innings, you could bring in Brett Walker, have him do another three innings.
Who we haven't mentioned at all?
Krobe. Yeah,
there you go.
Or River Ridings.
It might be Krobe. All right, moving on to the next question. Speaking of freshmen and kind of getting in crunch time here, there's a question from Boudreaux at Boudreaux 7 asks, how is David Bishop 44? How is his left hand doing? We need him strong and back in fighting condition for the tournament and postseason. I think what Boudreaux is referring to is the fact that he was on a hot streak to start the season in non-conference play, and he's cooled down a bit. You know, he's batting less successfully in conference. He's definitely it's just been a little bit different. But one of the things that we've mentioned on a previous pod is not that David Bishop, it may not be injury related. It may not even be that he's just not doing well. But he's a freshman. Right. And so he's coming back down to earth. And after that strong start, it wasn't necessarily sustainable to bat 400.
Now, to the positive side of David Bishop, the last couple of weeks, you know, since the Kansas series, or even right before that, Incarnate Word. I think he went 5 for 5.
Oh, you think so? Dude, we were blowing him up. He had a walk-off home run. Come on, man.
He's really started to swing the bat well. I don't have what he did in front of me this weekend, right, but it felt productive.
Yeah, I don't know, but...
I think we're fine. They did move him down to the sixth spot.
Yeah, they did on Sunday move him down to the sixth hole.
So with the regression, you know, everybody always thinks of regression as like this negative thing, because they only really talk about it when somebody's playing out of their mind.
Right.
But so, you know, we saw David Bishop before the conference, you know, game started. He was really good. He had a subpar conference stats or whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, regression can also mean that you play back to your level of skill. So he's gone through his slump.
I'd call that progression.
Yeah. Well, you just regress back to the median or the mean or whatever. But I think David Bishop's a good baseball player, and I think he'll pick it up.
Last question by CNL Burns. Thanks, Colin, for writing in. Is Baylor back? Colin, Baylor's never back. Thoughts?
Baylor suck.
We better beat him on Wednesday. Any last thoughts before we sign off here? We've got a lot of questions left. We've got probably a ton of content, but we're running long, and we don't know how many people are listening at this point.
Everyone's listening. They wanted to hear our Big 12 tournament thoughts. Again, no, let's go out and win the damn thing.
Come out to the game on Wednesday. It's at 12:30 at Globe Life. Ray will be there. I might be there. Jacob, I don't know. Guys, we'll see who's going to be there throughout the weekend. But we'd love to have a big contingent of purple out in the stands. We expect and hope to have a great weekend of games in the Big 12 tournament. And next weekend, I'm guessing Sunday night, they will release those top 8, top 16 seeds.
Next Monday morning.
Monday morning. And we'll know for sure whether or not we're hosting a regional the following weekend. So that's an exciting time. It's a great time to be a frog.
Will we be recording live on Selection Monday?
That's actually not – well, that is during Memorial Day. So Memorial Day. Everyone will be off. So, yeah, we could probably do a live.
Stay tuned to a possible live event with the LDC. All right, guys. See y'all next week. Go Frogs.
Go Frogs.
Come on, you Spurs.
About the sport of cockfighting.
Carlos Zirkos left his home in Casas Grandes when the moon was full. He had no money in his pocket, just a locket of his sister framed in gold. He headed for El Suegro, stole a rooster named Gallo de Cielo. And he crossed the Rio Grande, that rooster nestled deep beneath his arm. Gallo de Cielo was a warrior born in heaven, so the legends say. His wings, they had been broken. He had one eye rolling crazy in his head. Fought 100 fights, and the legends say that one night near El Suegro, they fought Cielo 7 times, and 7 times he left Brave Rooster dead. Hold on, my peace, I'm thinking of you now in San Antonio. I have $27 and the good luck of your picture framed in gold.